folks will be able to return to work and earn the income they're going to need to prepare for this upcoming winter months.
The Kensington Mine gets its final permit approved. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 14th of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an attack in downtown Anchorage caught on video.
The dialogue between the two people who assaulted him was just appalling.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Go deep inside Alaska, where the unparalleled meets the unexpected. Fairbanks emanates a quality of light, energy, and warmth found nowhere else on Earth. It's the unexpected Alaska. Fairbanks, located right in your own backyard, is full of activities from the mild to the wild. Experience summer's land of a midnight sun in Fairbanks. Information about attractions, travel, accommodations, and more online at explorefairbanks.com. This message sponsored by the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau.
The Kensington Gold Mine just received its long-awaited permit to construct a mine tailings facility at Lower Slate Lake. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issued the permit today. It is the last permit the company needs to complete construction at the mine site. The Corps of Engineers has extended the timeline for completing the project to 2014. That's because the mine has been tied up in litigation for the last 3 years by conservation groups challenging the lake tailings permit. The Kensington is owned by Core Alaska. The company recently won approval of that permit in the U.S. Supreme Court. Former mine employee Lillian Lundy is excited about the news.
It is a great relief, actually, you know, because a lot of folks will be able to return to work and earn the income they're going to need to prepare for this upcoming winter months.
The Juneau resident was one of 40 people laid off last year from the mine. She spent much of the past decade doing office work and operating heavy equipment at the site about 45 miles north of downtown Juneau. Now she's one of several hundred people hoping to get a job damming up Slate Lake and otherwise preparing the Kensington for startup. Randy Wanamaker runs a consortium of three Native corporations that trains and places mine employees. He says he's been hearing from a lot of people looking for jobs.
People have been calling me and asking, you know, what do I need to do to get started? People are calling me as they finish the mining training that the University of Alaska Southeast has been offering and letting me know that they've completed the training and what do they do to update their resume? When should they apply for what position?
Corps still has a hiring freeze, but Wanamaker says he expects about 250 people to be hired or rehired once it's lifted. With existing staff, that puts the construction workforce at about 300. Many of those people will stay on when mine begins production, estimated as soon as the middle of next year. News that the mine can go forward will be welcome in most quarters of Juneau, says Mayor Bruce Botello. When a federal court in 2007 ruled the Lake Tailings Disposal Plan illegal under the Clean Water Act, the city helped facilitate an alternative tailings plan between environmentalists and the company. Botello says the Corps of Engineers permit is also good news for the Southeast Alaska economy. The mine hires villagers as well as Juneau residents. Corps of Engineers project manager Richard Jackson says the agency received more than 8,500 comments from organizations and individuals during the public comment period on the permit modification. The Anchorage police, working with the FBI, have arrested two suspects who apparently assaulted a man for no reason other than he was Alaska Native. The investigation began when police received a tip that a video of the attack was posted on YouTube. KSKA's Len Anderson has details.
According to police spokesman Lieutenant Dave Parker, someone called Anchorage Crime Stoppers on August 5th with a tip. The person said that an assault being shown on the internet via YouTube had occurred in Anchorage. Parker said when the police watched the two sequential postings of the attack filmed by the assailants themselves, the police decided the case should include federal involvement.
The two videos were obtained by the detectives, and recognizing that there might be further implications, the Federal Bureau of Investigation was contacted. They conducted a joint investigation of the assault and what was going on behind the scenes there.
Behind the scenes means that the assault seems to have strong racial elements. Parker, who has seen the video, says the police have not found any other explanation.
Basically, what we saw was a man who was just minding his own business walking down the street, and the dialogue between the two people who assaulted him was just appalling. Racial epithets were used and threats were made. The man was hit with bottles of water that were thrown, eggs, and then finally hands and feet were used to kick him and hit him. In one place in the video, after the first contact with the man and the first assault, the couple actually lays in wait, hiding around the corner of a building for the same victim to walk by again. And then they jump out and assault him again. So it was just appalling.
Neither tape shows the victim fighting back. All he did was ask to be left alone and at one point tried to shake hands with his attackers. The assault took place in downtown Anchorage. Thursday night, two Anchorage residents, Robert Gum, 18, and Deanna Powers, 20, were arrested for assault in the fourth degree and harassment. The formal charges, scheduled to be filed late today, were not available by airtime. Both Gum and Powers are white. The two alleged assailants were transported to Anchorage jail with bond set at $500 for Powers and $1,000 plus a third-party appointed custodian requirement for Gum. Lieutenant Parker said the investigation is continuing.
The investigators have seized evidence at the home where apparently these two were living. That took place yesterday, concurrent with the arrest. They will be looking through that evidence and actually processing it, looking for any evidence of any other assaults. Our detective that I talked to said that he was pretty sure that there had been other similar assaults.
The victim in the video did not report the attack or go to the hospital. Police had to track him down from the video. The authorities now hope if there are more victims, after hearing of the arrests, they will contact the police. The video has been removed from YouTube. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
State Senator Albert Kukesh has pleaded not guilty to a subsistence fishing violation and says he will contest the charge. Kukesh appeared in district court in his hometown of Angoon on Wednesday to enter his plea. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Kukesh, age 60, was cited by state troopers for being over the possession limit of sockeye salmon in Kanalshku Bay near Angoon earlier in July. In addition to Kukesh, troopers issued citations to 49-year-old Rocky L. Estrada Sr., 56-year-old Stanley Johnson, and 41-year-old Scott T. Hunter, all of Angoon. Efforts to reach the senator for comment by deadline for this story were unsuccessful. According to the trooper case report, the four were using a beach seine in Kanalshku Bay to fish for sockeye on July 12th. A fifth permit holder was on scene at the time of the violation but was not cited. State law allows subsistence fishermen to possess 15 sockeye per person in that watershed, or a total of 75 for the five people on scene. Trooper records indicate that the fishermen were in possession of a combined total of 148 sockeye. All four of the men entered not guilty pleas in a telephonic hearing before Sitka Superior Court Judge David George. George was substituting in the district court for Angoon Magistrate Elaine Kukesh, who is Senator Kukesh's daughter. Exceeding the possession limit of a subsistence permit is considered a non-criminal offense and carries a maximum fine of $500 plus forfeiture of the fish. George told the defendants that they had a right to trial before a judge, but not before a jury. He also said that they could be represented by counsel, although the court would not appoint one. George scheduled a trial for the week of October 5th. Troopers delivered the additional 73 sockeye to the Angoon Senior Center. Senator Kukesh is a Democrat representing District C in the legislature, where he is chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. He is also chairman of the board of Sea Alaska, Inc., the area's regional Native corporation, and a co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Senator Murkowski hears from Fairbanks residents about the proposed health care overhaul.
Why is it that the federal government feels that they have to take care of all of our health care of all the people in the United States?
That's ahead.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Great weekdays begin with the most up-to-date local news and information on APRN's Alaska Morning News. The Alaska Morning News, the news you wake up to.
State legislators today got a chance to weigh in on the recent changes in the new management tool the Permanent Fund now uses to assess risk on its investments. The fund's board of trustees had not adequately prepared lawmakers for the changes and the questions that it would raise. Steve Frank, the chairman of the fund's trustees, and executive director Mike Burns apologized for the oversight. Burns said he underestimated the concern that would come from the change, which he and the fund's staff saw as an in-house investment tool.
This, to us, seems very much inside baseball. What we are, as the chairman said, how we're observing our assets has changed. What we're observing is really not. At the end of the day, you'll see we've got 95% the same assets.
Coming off one of the worst years in history for U.S. investors and showing a 17% loss, the trustees approved classifying its investments by risk rather than by the traditional categories such as stocks, bonds, and real estate. Chief Investment Officer Jeff Scott told the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee that the fund's basic principles are still the same.
The objective for the permanent fund is a 5% real return over the long term. That has not changed. We want to protect the principal while maximizing return. Number two is our tolerance for risk. We did not change it, meaning that we did not increase our level of tolerance for risk. We stayed at static quo to what it had been for the last 5+ years.
Scott said the new management tools will reduce the risk to the fund by separating higher yield, higher risk investment into one category and lower yield, low risk investments into another. Both types of investments will get special attention. House Finance Co-Chair Mike Hawker is skeptical of the anticipated results from the changes, and he questions how the fund will set standards for investment. As questions remain from members, Committee Chair Kevin Meyer promises a further hearing at the next meeting, September 23rd. About 400 people attended a meeting on health care reform in Fairbanks last night. The forum was held by Senator Lisa Murkowski to gather public feedback on proposed legislation aimed at making health care better, more affordable, and available to more people. KYC's Dan Bross has the story.
Senator Murkowski said she scheduled the Fairbanks Public Forum and others statewide after hearing from constituents frustrated with the healthcare system. In a press conference prior to the Fairbanks meeting, Murkowski said many Alaskans are unhappy with their health insurance.
They're seeing their healthcare costs increasing. They're seeing the businesses are seeing their premiums increasing by double digits. They've got health coverage. Perhaps, but when an incident happens, they find that perhaps some of what they had expected would be covered is not.
Murkowski made it clear she supports reform, but said she's opposed to current proposals based on the existing limited federal Medicare insurance program.
Medicare is a system that is going to go belly up by 2017. And yet the proposal is we are going to create this new government-run system modeled off something that is broken rather than attempting to fix what is broken.
Murkowski cited a March 2009 University of Alaska study that found only 13 of 75 doctors in Anchorage willing to take on new Medicare patients due to low government reimbursement rates. During the town hall meeting, Murkowski laid out key concerns with increased government involvement in health care.
There's a whole lot of discussion going on right now about these medical panels and what they may or may not do. I want to make sure that if it's my doc looking at my knee, it's the two of us talking about it, and it's not a panel in Washington, D.C. that's saying what the correct procedure is.
I want to make sure that we're equitably reimbursing our health care providers. We need to be prohibiting financing of health care reform on the backs of America's small businesses. We need to be very, very, very careful about how we pay for this.
Murkowski also cited the need for reform of malpractice law that results in doctors overprescribing expensive tests and procedures out of fear of being sued. She said President Obama's October deadline for health care reform legislation is too tight, given the number and complexity of the issues. Some attendees of the forum, like Rick Sikma of North Pole, were critical of any government involvement in health care.
Why is it that the federal government feels that they have to take care of all of our health care of all the people in the United States? I don't see that on the Constitution, and I don't believe that's part of what we are doing.
Another forum speaker, Jeff Iverson of Fairbanks, offered an alternative path to coming up with ways to improve health care.
But I've wondered if the whole model of having the Congress put together a program isn't just starting off on the wrong foot. Perhaps the Congressional Budget Office, or whatever it's called, could be the monitor with something like an initiative process where anybody, big pharma, big insurance, tort lawyers, private institutions can present their own plans that have to meet a variety of criteria and have a checklist just like you've presented.
Iverson said regional health care cooperatives are one potential solution that could arise from such a process. Murkowski was supportive, saying regional co-ops could allow customized health care in places with special challenges like Alaska. It was clear at the forum that there are many ways the government can affect Americans' health. Evan Perrigo of Fairbanks suggested more regulation of corporate America as a means to reducing the overall need for health care.
It seems to me that one of the things that's making it so expensive is that this is, let's face it, the fattest, most overweight, most under-exercised nation in the history of the world. Now, there are a lot of different ways of possibly dealing with this. With, you know, taxes on soda, or heck, a Surgeon General's warning with a picture of a fat person on your on things that have too many calories. I don't know how you're going to do it, but it seems like we're at the point where something needs to be done about this.
Murkowski said working the front end of the issue is a good approach, but offered alternative ideas, saying she supports increased coverage of preventative measures through private or public insurance, as well as incentives for making healthy choices. Senator Murkowski has three additional public meetings on health care reform scheduled around Alaska during the congressional recess through the end of the month. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
This week is National Community Health Centers Week. KBBI's Casey Kelly talked to the directors of two health centers and has this report.
Stan Stedman is the executive director of Peninsula Community Health Services in Soldotna. He says community health centers are nonprofit and local or community-owned facilities serving patients that are mostly low-income and medically underserved.
There certainly are people that just can't afford health care, and our private sector is in the business, as caring as they might be, to make a profit. And we're in a situation where we have the opportunity to extend health care. We do have the support of the federal government to an extent that allows us to reach out to folks that otherwise would have a challenge in being able to pay for and afford the health care services.
Health centers generally offer sliding scale rates to patients who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford a doctor's visit. Becky Noble is the director of SVT Health Center in Homer.
Well, it depends on what the person is there to be seen for. As a community health center, we need to charge fair market rates as our base fee. However, people based on their family size and income then can receive a discount. And discounts, I mean, a nominal fee patient may pay as little as, say, $20 for a visit.
Noble says her facility serves basically the same population as PCHS, although it was founded to serve members of the Sildovia Village Tribe.
In 2002, we received some federal funding as a community health center, and so that's when we opened our doors to the community at large. And we happily see anyone who seeks health care in our facility.
These days, Noble says 71% of SVT's patients are non-native. Besides the main facility in Homer, the center has satellite clinics in Soldovia and Anchor Point. SVT also has expanded its services to include not only general medicine, but dental services as well.
I think that's a program that has really taken off in this area, improving access to oral health and dental services.
Peninsula Community Health Services has also expanded its offerings over the years. It initially started out as two separate health care providers, Central Peninsula Health Centers and Central Peninsula Counseling Services, which merged about a year ago. Stedman says the resulting organization is focused on treating what he calls the whole patient.
We recognize that we both are points of entry for people. People coming in for medical services are often in need of some behavioral health support and vice versa. So it just seemed to make a lot of sense.
Healthcare is a hot topic these days as Congress works on legislation to overhaul the nation's healthcare system. One of the goals of the overhaul is to make access to healthcare easier and more affordable, something that health centers have been doing for years. But Stedman, for one, doesn't see the role of centers like PCHS or SVT changing too much as a result.
You know, I think our focus will always be, just the way I read it, will be to serving the under and uninsured as we have. But again, I think both of our clinics that are being represented here serve a broad spectrum of patients in our communities. And I think that role will also continue.
National Community Health Centers Week continues through August 15th. In Homer, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world.
The upcoming Bethel City election is shaping up to be a historic one. Of the 7 seats, 5 are open for election. On top of that, there's a court order, an alcohol question, a possible tax question, and a pregnancy. KYUK's Shane Iverson has more.
Potential candidates have never had more opportunities of getting on the council. A supermajority of seats will be open when voters head to the polls on October 6th. The circumstances are the result of a few factors. For one, the 2007 election marked the end of 3-year terms and a switch exclusively to 2-year terms. Also, there have been 2 council resignations over the last few years, which is also throwing off the timing. The city also recently settled a lawsuit with Yupik elders represented by the Native American Rights Fund and the ACLU of Alaska. At a previous meeting, Councilmember Hugh Diamond said that will be a factor in the upcoming election.
And we are under basically an injunction to do things differently than we've been doing in the past, or add to what we've been doing.
That includes training and providing translators of bilingual ability in Yupik and English, and reporting to the Federal District Court about language assistance. It also includes sample ballot translations of ballot questions. There will be at least 1 ballot question in this election, and there could be 2. One will ask Bethel residents if the city should revoke local option. That would have the effect of ending restrictions on alcohol importations and would open the possibility for alcohol sales in town. Currently, alcohol can be imported and consumed, but it cannot be bought or sold. The council is also considering a ballot question that would ask Bethel voters if they want to make the 6% sales tax permanent. And while all this is going on, the person in charge of running the elections may not be available.
I am due September 18th.
Bethel's city clerk, Lori Strickler.
I'm not planning on taking any maternity leave prior to the delivery. However, when I do deliver, I will be taking 6 weeks off.
Strickler says she will return to work for the election if she is able to, but there's no guarantee. The city council has been seeking a replacement to fill in as acting city clerk and is currently accepting applications. But the council has made some contingency plans. Councilmember Dan Leinberger.
I think election is something that you can't really hope it goes well. It has to go well. We want to make absolutely sure that this is done and runs like a Swiss watch.
To that effect, the council voted to hire someone to handle the election. Strickler said she's well qualified for the work.
She actually goes around the state of Alaska and trains for elections.
The council allotted $6,000 to pay a private clerk for hire, but not everyone was happy with the price tag. Councilmember Dan Leinberger.
At a rate of $750 a day, and gosh darn, I'm in the wrong business.
But council decided the price tag was worth it for leaving the election in capable hands. Vice Mayor Eric Middlebrook.
We would be getting a little more peace of mind as it were just winding down a lawsuit concerning elections, and to have somebody experienced with elections on this particular election is probably the most important one that we could want some experience on rather than having somebody new.
As the city looks for an acting clerk to fill in for the entire 6 weeks of Strickler's leave, Strickler is still accepting candidacy forms for those that want to serve 2 years on Bethel City Council. The deadline to submit is August 30th. I'm Shane Iverson.
The municipality of St. Mary's has decided to further restrict the amount of alcohol that's legally available to its residents, effective immediately. KNOM's Paul Korchin has more from Nome.
St. Mary's in 2006 voted to go from dry to damp, meaning alcohol can be imported for private use but not sold. Interim city manager Doug Griffin says they also created a central distribution center through which all the beverages have to pass.
And so they set up the delivery site by ordinance after the vote of the people to go damp. So the city had already limited in the area of spirits, distilled liquor, say 6 bottles. Of fifths of liquor per month. The state allows 14, and then the city allowed under the limits what the state amounts of 24 liters of wine and 12 gallons of beer.
But on August 10th, St. Mary's leaders decided to tighten the reins even more.
The city council, under the new limits, will reduce that to 3 bottles per month, plus 10 liters of wine. So that is where they actually cut that more than half of what was allowed. And 3 cases of beer, or 6.75 gallons of beer. They asked for it to go into effect immediately, so we had to really scramble here the last couple of days to notify package stores, the ABC board.
The vote was unanimous. People who want to import alcohol have needed to get a city permit that allows for residency and background checks. Griffin says both the availability and price for those permits are also changing.
The city council, at the same time, they limited the number of permits to 1 per household. They thought that 1 permit per household was enough alcohol for the whole household. And then they also increased the permit fee, which was $25 for an annual membership, an annual fee, to $100.
Griffin says there's been no single big or tragic event that motivated village leaders to tighten regulations. Rather, it's more of an effort to prevent alcohol-related incidents, big or small.
This allows you a high degree of local control. And it is really the ultimate local option when you can start trying kind of picking and choosing how the amounts that you think are too liberal under the state's setup. So it was just the council sort of exercising its authority to try to find the sweet spot, as I call it, of not too much alcohol coming in, but enough so that you're not encouraging or providing a good territory for bootleggers to come in.
Griffin notes he turned out to be especially well-positioned to assist the community.
It's just one of those kind of a funny Alaskan story ironies, but the job I had prior to coming out here for this summer to help them hire a new city manager was I was the director of the ABC board for 12 years and actually worked with St. Mary's in a different capacity as the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board to help them establish this community delivery site.
Griffin says St. Mary's alcohol distribution system is not a big moneymaker for the village, but it pays for itself with a little to spare. In Nome, I'm Paul Korchin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Homer, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Rosemary Alexander and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Paul Korchin in Nome. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.